It's not every day that I get to speak to a world's foremost anything, let alone the world's foremost scholar of organizations and human behavior. Joining me from New York is American social psychologist, author, and Vikram S. Pandit Professor of Business at Columbia Business School, Adam Galinsky. I'm Scott Catoon, and it's time to start talking about tomorrow's business today. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm very grateful to have you here. Before we get into things, I have to have a shout out to my friend and former Northwestern University classmate Anastasia Isova for setting this entire thing up. She was helped research for your book, which we will get into, Friend and Foe. I guess why don't we start by just getting into what is Friend and Foe?
So Friend and Foe is a book that I co-authored with Marie Schweitzer, and the basic thesis of the book is really simple, but I think incredibly profound and has a number of implications. And basically, it's that every relationship that we have in the world is characterized by fundamental tension between cooperation and competition. And the example I like to give is, think about new parents. They've just had a newborn. They have to cooperate to nurture this new being. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, they fight and compete fiercely over the scarce resource of sleep. And we see this with sibling love and sibling rivalry. We see this with our friends, frenemies. We see this at work, where we cooperate to produce new products and to come up with ideas, but then we compete for salary and bonuses and promotions. And so we can really only understand human nature by understanding that every relationship is characterized by this fundamental tension.
So it's an interesting thing that you bring up. I didn't get a chance to read through the entire book, although I did get a chance to get through several chapters of it. And the two things that stood out to me that I wanted to talk about in particular, one is just the idea, the notion behind cooperation versus competition. The other thing that I thought was great is the way that we compare ourselves to our Facebook friends. And I just had a conversation with a couple of people I work with about this exact thing. So I'm looking forward to having you dive a little bit deeper into that.
Great.
Why don't you start talking about the cooperation versus competition?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, basically to be successful in the world, we have to recognize that every relationship has seeds and roots of both of these forces. And we need to find the right balance between these forces. So, for example, if we cooperate too much, we basically make ourselves vulnerable to exploitation. People can take advantage of us. If we compete too much, we don't have any friends, we can't expand the pie, and we're constantly in a state of war. And so to be successful, we have to find the right balance between these two forces. And in the book, what we do is we take a lot of different topics that I've researched and Marisa's researched and apply this framework to understanding it. So I'll just give you one example. With power, I've shown in a lot of my research that people who have power, it fundamentally changes their basic psychology and even their physiology. People with power have lower cortisol, the stress hormone that leads them to be more optimistic and confident. It's power is like a psychological accelerator. But I've also shown in my research that the powerful tend not to be very good perspective takers. In a sense, they lose their psychological steering wheel. And so to be successful in the world, we need to be able to, you know, drive down the highway with our speed and acceleration, but we need a really good steering wheel. And so we need to find the right balance where you have power and perspective taking.
You know, I've noticed that. I mean, I work with startup companies all the time, and one of the things that that we talk about with most of the CEOs or the founders, if you will, is that they need to have a balance as they grow, right? They need to be able to work with their team and be fair and understanding and not go all Steve Jobs all the time. But yet at the same time, you're managing a world that is full of uncertainty, financially, market, you know, lots of things that could collapse their company overnight. And you have to be a little bit crazy, a little bit over cocky, if you will. And yep. It's interesting to me. This is where when I first started diving into your book, I started thinking, man, the applications here. I mean, as mentioned, when I went to Northwestern with Anastasia, you know, we had a program that we spent a lot of time diving into organizational culture and how certain leaders can impact groups and certain different communicators and role players within an organization, if you will, are so important. And it's funny to me now to think about it. We did not obviously dive into the neurological version of this, and that's, you know, sort of where you hang your hat, so to speak. I mean, you bring up some amazing points there. It's what do you think people can do, or can they do anything with regard to the power?
Yeah, I mean, I think two things. One is that, you know, we want to harness power, especially when we're feeling, in a sense, a little vulnerable. So I think one of the examples where this balance really becomes important is in, let's say, a job interview. Now, to be successful, you've got to be confident. And so thinking about a time when you had power, for example, can boost your confidence temporarily. But at the same time, you also need to be deferential, right? Because the other person's interviewing, they do have more power than you. And so you have to find that right balance between confidence and deference. And I think that when we do have power, we just have to recognize that we be a little bit more self-focused, and we have to remind ourselves almost on a daily basis to make it a habit to, am I taking other people's perspectives? Am I integrating what other people are thinking and feeling? And I think that's really the key to effective leadership. What I think about leadership is that combination of power and perspective taking.
You know, since I want to slide over to the Facebook part for a second. One of the things that's interesting, so I'm going to put myself out there on this one and show some vulnerability, which is not part of my normal repertoire.
Well, we talk about in the book that how showing vulnerability can actually help you be more liked and even respected.
Well, hopefully that is the case in this particular question. So professionally, you know, having a show on the radio and working with a lot of startup companies where these founders are looking to me for advice, and even large corporations looking to me to help them, you know, make the next strides with the market. It is somewhat of a powerful role, particularly when you are meeting very high-powered individual CEOs of major companies, and they're looking up to you for things. And so professionally, I find myself in a situation where I'm constantly trying to balance that thing of, like, I want to make sure that I'm humble and that, you know, my success is based on my empathy for understanding what other people are looking for and wanting. And so if I lose that, everything else is gone, right? So I try to focus heavily on being able to balance both, as you said, the cooperation and the competition, and being the deference, if you will. Then socially, I tend to want to not have to be so in control of myself, and I can just sort of let go and not be, you know, worried about powerful, and just kind of float through things. And it actually creates kind of tension sometimes, particularly when people are with me in a work environment, and then we go socially into something, you know, not professional, it's more personal. And I'm not quite the same person. And I've always wondered, you know, what do you think of something like that? Do you see that commonly?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that, you know, online definitely changes the way we express ourselves. And, you know, there's some research that, you know, introverted people really can come alive online and express themselves in a way that they can't when they're in other types of social situations. And so I think that our behavior does change. And I think one way that it really particularly changes on Facebook, which brings up this comparison point, is that we often use Facebook to talk about our successes. And so oftentimes we can get flooded with how well other people are doing, and that can make us feel a little bit disappointed in our own lives. And there's some data that suggests, you know, that people who are extravagant users of Facebook and other social media actually originally was thought that it would make people less lonely and connect them to more people. But it turns out it actually makes people more lonely and feel a little bit less connected to people. And so you can see how these comparisons process really come into play. How am I doing relative to other people? And on Facebook, we have a very, very biased analysis of how well other people are doing.
Well, to second that thought, I have two friends literally within the last 24 hours who have posted the, you know, everybody does the old, you know, paragraph long, I'm done with Facebook for a while, blah, 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 and literally cited that watching other people's, you know, happiness, so to speak, during this tough time is just too much for them to bear. And they're walking away for a moment. So that totally is true.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, comparisons are really so important for our lives, and they happen immediately, and we're not even aware of them, and they impact us in fundamental and profound ways. And one of my favorite examples of this is looking at Olympic medalists. I think we all agree that second place is better than third place. It's better to be a silver medalist than a bronze medalist. But when you actually look at the people on the medal stand, almost everyone who wins the gold smiles. Most of the people who win the bronze smile, but very few people who win the silver smile. Silver medalists are much more disappointed than bronze medalists, because bronze medalists are carrying down to getting nothing, and silver medalists are carrying up to the ultimate award, which is the gold medal. And you can see how fundamentally these comparisons really affect our behavior, and we can be happy with our outcome until we find out someone else got a better deal or a better raise or a better promotion, and then we're disappointed.
Is there anything that people can do to try to practice or try to not let this impact them negatively or positively, I guess, in some cases? Is there any suggestions you have?
Absolutely. So I think a couple of things. One is to recognize that we're getting biased information, and we're getting, let's say, on social media is a sanitized versions of people's lives. And so not to be sort of take them at face value. I think the second thing is also we can be sensitive to our friends when we've had successes and they've had down things, is not to rub our successes in their face, for example. And I see that, you know, a lot of times when you look at people applying to schools and, you know, someone gets in and their best friend doesn't get into the school they wanted, it's how do you be sensitive to that person while also still celebrating your success? And again, it's finding that right balance.
Very good points. Where do people go to find a copy of Friend and Foe?
You can get it anywhere. Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com. You can go to bookstores. It's all over the world. And you will be a happier, better person if you purchase it.
I agree. I hope people actually do read it because, and I'm definitely going to go back and finish the book. I've always been fascinated about organizational communication, organizational culture, people, the way that people interact, and just the overall human behavior. So this has been really fun for me. Thank you for taking the time today, Professor Galinsky.
Sure. Thank you so much.
You can stream this episode and more on the WGN Plus app or download each episode on iTunes. And remember to stay connected by following us on Twitter at TBT on WGN. Boom, that's a wrap.